Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, August 29, 2001. In the Creekside Room this afternoon is Marion Junghans. Today's session number is YUM 2001-01, and the title is Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. Let's listen to Marion.
And you're in a whole new world. Then you can walk around it, and you're going, wow, I didn't know that such a thing existed. It takes you right out of your body. All right, now one trick. Oh, here we got a couple more people. All right, here, tell you what, gentlemen, let's pull this table over, okay? We've got the chairs. Pull this chair. You're a strong man. Yeah, just pull it over. All right, I'm going to ask some of you to share your visuals. There's at least one or two extra tables. Just pass those extra visuals to that table. Okay. We're all set. We all have a seat and round your toe. Is it okay to move your toenail
on
you?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about these visuals that you have in front of you. Once again, I'll start all over. These are taken from books that are called Magic Eyes. About 5, 6, 7 years ago, these were really, really popular, and there are many different versions of these. I want to show you the specific instructions on how to get into this, because the computer, these are computer generated, and the computer people decided on how to access the inside information, and there's always instructions in the back. So it's helpful if you will let me show you how to access the information. Right, first of all, you want to have your number of your page at the bottom, because if there is a visual, a definite visual to see, then it'll be easier to identify. Some of the visuals only are patterns, so don't expect to see something special. Even if you see some sort of a figure, it doesn't have to be what anybody else says it is. It is what you see. Okay, we see the world through our own eyes. So don't say, oh, I saw a rabbit. Is this right? There's no right or wrong. You may see a rabbit. Someone else may see a big mouse. I don't know. You know, anything, and in this realm, anything is possible because it is out of your eyes and not out of somebody else's. May I borrow yours a minute? Okay, I want to do a demonstration, so please watch before you start this. You will keep your arms free, all right? You don't want your arms close to your body, and as you move it out, you go like this because then you change the focus. You want your arms free, off of the table, and you'll put the number at the bottom, put the card right up next to your nose, and right straight in front of you, both eyes will focus on one spot. It can be black, white, red, it doesn't make any difference. Then you will begin to slowly, slowly pull it out straight. Slowly, slowly, slowly. Somewhere between the beginning and the end, your eyes are going to start feeling like they're crossing. And then suddenly, you will begin to see figures coming out at you. And when you have popped into that picture, then you can walk around like Alice in Wonderland, and you're in a whole new world. The only way you're going to get out of it is by looking at the edge. If you look at the edge here, you'll pop right out of it. If you look up at something else, you're out of it. So stay in it and walk around and be patient with it. don't say this is really, really stupid. No one's looking at you. You know, I don't care. You know, this is just, and you do have two sides. So try one. If you try it a couple times rather than hit the frustration mark, turn it around and see if the other side comes any better. And trade with your neighbor.
Okay. I see an eagle down your shirt. I'm looking at
it. You okay?
Totally.
Pretty good. I'm going to figure out a point that he's going to keep your eye on.
Stay on that and let your eyes go to the left.
There's a two right here.
Yeah, there's two right there.
No, I can see something there. It's rather better without my glasses.
Some people find that it's easier to see if you take off your glasses, particularly if you have trifocals or bifocals. Some people find it better to wear their reading glasses. So it really just depends.
You're supposed to just keep a soft focus as you're...
Yeah, just keep it fuzzy. Keep it fuzzy. Don't try to see anything. Just, yeah, I know it's hard. Keep it fuzzy. Keep it focused on one thing, both eyes. Mm-hmm. Your eyes are going to start feeling like they're crossed. Actually, it almost hurts, and then all of a sudden it goes pow. It pops in. Yeah.
You didn't hear it?
That's good.
That's the same as on the front. Now, some of these are from book one and some are from book two. The book one is they're a little easier to see. So if you're having a lot of problems and you've never done this before, you might just want to trade with your neighbor. I can't tell you which ones are one or two. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about it. There are two sides. Just go ahead.
Wow, that's a challenge.
Did you get all these?
Did you explain how it works yet?
Do you watch
how they work?
Why?
One guy goes crazy.
It's hilarious.
But now
we're on a
you take a close range object and make you do long range focusing, so your eyes have to cross and place the lines together. You can do it with stretched walls too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I've got the 3D effect,
alright.
I can see a 3D but I can't figure out what it is. It looks like rows of angels.
Did you find the spot?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it hurts to turn it. Peter, once you've got it, try turning it. Oh, really?
No, I haven't. I brought it, I thought we were going to be actually doing the drawing.
Enjoy it. All right. We got a believer here. Have you traded off?
Try upside down.
All right, how many people in the front here have had success? We've got some people in the back that want to trade. Okay. Three for three?
Mm-hmm. How's that? Mm-hmm. This one's got a three.
Have you seen all of these?
I've discovered that once you're doing the 3D, if you rotate it 90 degrees, it will feel like someone's pulling the eyes right out of your head.
No kidding, I've never done that.
Yeah, it really hurts.
Holy cow, then don't do it.
It really hurts.
Here's a couple more.
Whoa, Peter, I got this one. Get me out.
Try this thing. This is what it is. I got it. It doesn't have to be in. Oh, it doesn't have to be in. Did you get it?
Did you get this one?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow, that's right.
That's awesome.
What's You've got to rotate it 90 degrees.
I need to. Okay.
And what happened here?
I heard.
I bet you were the teacher's worst nightmare.
That's why I was set up front.
Always looking at things.
This is the My eyes are tired now.
What did you find?
The guy you came from. You let go of the only one I needed.
Yeah, I was.
How does this work? What has this been from the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain?
You're actually doing a switch. You're seeing the same cognitive suddenly as you get into this thing, switches over to
that's what I was doing here.
Mm-hmm. That's what the exercise is about.
Well, how could I use that in the future?
Did you ever get this one? We'll talk about that too.
Like it worked.
No, that's not it. Yeah, we'll talk about that too. Okay? Yeah, raise your hand if you're still having problems. Mm-hmm. Okay, you haven't had anything yet, all right? Let me work with you a minute.
Did you finally get one?
Yeah, I got
one. I'm a firm believer
that 90, almost 100% of people can do this. Okay, I wouldn't sit like this. I would sit down straight, okay, because you're raising it up above your head.
Like a maze.
And that's not the way it's going to work.
It is a maze.
Put this thing out. Just straight up. Don't look up or down.
Maybe it's the colors.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'd like to
tell it. Okay. I like the one on the back.
Did you have any luck?
No. Well, I'll have to give you some questions. I wish I could get which one was the easiest. I don't know which one is the easiest one.
Where's the one with the green grass?
Is there one with the green
grass? Try this. Try this. Don't look at the fence. Don't look at the sky. But just look again. Look at that. You know,
that was the first one.
I thought this was the one.
I wonder if you can go back and get it again. Oh, no, it was one on the back that I got first. It looked like a column.
But you have to pull it out.
Oh, yeah, the column.
That was the first one I got.
You have to pull it out.
Do you see somebody on horses?
Yeah.
I'll try it. Can you get it? Just
that. Maybe you did. Yeah,
well,
maybe.
What did you say about how it works? Help me get it. Help me do it.
What did you say?
Your eyes are focusing, as if they're focusing on something distant, and so that moves the lines really close.
Yeah, I see it. Martin?
Yeah,
I see it. Did you get it, Sarah?
I'm going to say.
Kind of
I think it's math.
Which one are you looking at?
Yeah. Can you get it?
You see a horse?
A horse. There's a horse right here. And three trees.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Can
nice.
You get this one?
Okay. Oh, you want to get a horse and three trees?
Yeah, but that's kind of
that. Oh, it's so weird. Once you get it, it's just so odd.
Yeah.
Yeah, once you see it.
Okay, let's pass them in, and we'll talk about why in the world are we doing this? What does this have to do with anything?
I think maybe Matt is on our staff here. He works downstairs in Arts and Crafts, and Matt is very, very creative. Matt, why don't you explain to me physically what happened with the nearsightedness and so forth? Tell us that. Okay.
Those of you that have glasses, you know there's nearsight and farsight. And this just plays with that. The patterns, if you look at, like, one that has pictures of actual things, you'll see they're chopped up. And they're chopped up because when you look at it close range, it's just a pattern. But if you focus on it like it's 20 feet away, it brings you into the other range of focus. And it either spreads the lines out until they overlap on each other, or brings them together so they overlap on each other, and then you get a three-dimensional image.
All right. And when that overlap happens, well, that's what happens physically, mm-hmm. you know, as far as your eyes are concerned. Mm-hmm. But when that overlap happens, you all of a sudden go from your left brain to your right brain, which is a switch. And when you walk into that glass, through the glass, into your wonderland, you are completely in your right brain. You are out of this world. Because there's nothing around you that matters. You're not sitting next to anybody. You are in a whole completely different world. And this is one of the basic principles of being right brain, is seeing things differently than what they really are. And we're going to investigate and go through that. Okay. Now, I have been cut short. Our scheduling this afternoon really got messed up. Too many things were happening at one time. And instead of this being a two-hour class, it's going to be an hour-and-a-half class. I'm not going to go through the drawing exercise with you, but we're going to go through other exercises that will still be talking basically about the right and the left brain. If you are interested in drawing, this is an older edition. The bookstore has a newer edition. Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain by Betty Edwards. I have taught from this book for the last 15 years. I have used it for kindergarten, first graders, all the way up to seniors. I mean, every age group it works. It's something like what you're doing here. You come in and say, well, I can't draw a straight line, you know, or everything I do draw is all crooked. That's fine. In fact, people who know how to draw and they take this class through here really get frustrated because it's not the way that they have approached drawing, and it can really be disorientating. So if you know nothing about it, it really is easier. But she takes you step by step from the beginning, talking about the right and left brain. And it's one of these books that is a lesson upon a lesson upon a lesson, and it just takes a lot of listening to work through. I have taught this. What you're getting today is nothing much more than maybe the first three pages. I taught this for 8 weeks for 3 or 4 hour classes, and I've never really gotten completely through the book because we do a lot of drawing along the way. But if you're really interested in even if you don't really want to learn how to draw, but to get the idea of what she's doing, you're going to go, I hope that you even go out of here today seeing things not quite the same way that you saw when you came in. Okay? That you're seeing a new element, a new insight, what we call an artist's eye. Okay? I want to discuss a minute about, let's go through some of the characteristics of right and left brain. Okay. You start out by being kind of academic, and then we'll shoot off from there.
I like this view.
Okay, as you see, some terminology says left mode, right mode. Some will say left hemisphere, left brain, right brain. However you say it, it means the same thing. Before you start reading this thing, we're going to go through it. Let me explain to you that the brain has two hemispheres. Mm-hmm. It actually does. And they interact with each other. They're connected to each other. But each side has a distinct function. When people have strokes, it depends on what side of their brain has been affected. If it's their left brain, then it affects their right side, and vice versa. The brain is designed for all kinds of functions, and it's kind of like a marriage. You know how when we choose a partner, it's usually someone of an opposite personality, so it balances us out. Well, that's kind of what the brain is like. One side is very much one way, and the other side is very much another way. That doesn't mean that you're totally right or left, but you can be combined. Okay, for now, just for purposes of discussing the right and left, let's talk about the characteristics of the left brain compared to the right brain. Okay, the left brain is verbal. This is where you learn your language. Babies are born right-brained. Babies don't have a language. They babble, they cry, but they don't have a language per se. Their learning comes through tactile. Everything goes in the mouth. They have to feel everything until about two or three, and they begin to start to learn language. Up until that time, they are completely right-brained. They react to light. They react to humidity. They react to a lot of environmental things, but not to the printed word, not to reading, because they can't read, okay? Or to even when you talk to them, they don't understand what you're saying because they don't understand words yet. So the left brain uses words to name, describe, and define. The right brain is nonverbal. A right-brained person who's very, very right-brained, very creative, finds it difficult to put into words their feelings or what they experience, such as, if you were to go up to Heart Lake and see the sunset, and you came back and someone asked you, would you please tell me how that sunset looked? I'm lost for words, because you experienced it. You experience it. So what do? Well, if you're an artist, maybe you will paint a picture. If you're a dancer, you'll dance it. If you're a musician, you'll write a music about it. If you're a poet, which is the best of two worlds, because you make up your own, you use regular language, but you make up the way that you put words together and the way you form it, you can write a poem about it. But you just can't stand there and say, gee, there was this red streak and this orange streak and then this eagle flew across there. I mean, you're going, oh, well, so what? You know, you cannot describe it. And so this is the thing that drives artists to their craft, to what they're gifted in, because they are so driven to express themselves that they will all gather up in an attic someplace in a little bohemia, share the same piece of cheese, and they will struggle and struggle. I'm talking about some of different movements of art that came out of Paris. And they will struggle and struggle, and they have to say what they want to say, but they can't say it any other way but through painting. And they keep breaking new ground and breaking through, but all in with paint or charcoal or drawing or whatever. That's what creates music, that's what creates dance, that's what creates all the creative world. And I will tell you, folks, that this world is not right-brained. This world is very left-brained, and it's very technical, technology-driven. Mm-hmm. And people who are of, quote, of this world, who uses words and descriptions and machines and all that, they look at the right-brained person and they say, oh, you're off the wall, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just, and we are. I'm very right-brained and I am off the wall and I admit it. But there are times that I can be pretty left-brained too. But I don't like it. Okay, let's go on. The left brain is analytic. It figures things out step by step. A to B, B to C, C to D. And that's the way our technology is developed. That's the way engineering is developed. That's the way the whole world is put together. Nothing wrong with that, because we need this kind of approach. But the creative, the right side of the brain, takes not A to B to C to D, but it takes the whole, it's a holistic approach. Sometimes you're dealing with a situation that you don't have the answer to. It could be any kind of a situation. You could be weaving on a loom. You could be trying to, do something creative, or even in your own area of at work or something. And this thing has gone into a gestation period. And all of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, you will wake up. I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I go, uh-huh! And I rush to my loom, and I start weaving, because the answer came to me. And I say, well, where did that come from? I mean, I didn't go from A to B to C to D. Somewhere in this whole world of mine of many years, things have come together, and I've been able, in subconsciously, to put something together, and it comes out in its own creative form. Don't ask me how, it just does. And I know that all of you have had these uh-huh experiences. You say, oh yeah, why didn't I think of that sooner? Well, you hadn't gone through the steps, whatever the steps were. And so we put things together to form holes. We don't take specifics to form holes. Again, it's symbolic. The left brain is symbolic. Symbols, numbers, letters, geometry, all this stuff is all symbolic. It all stands for something. Okay, you don't argue with it. That's what it is. The right brain is not very symbolic. It's very concrete. What makes kids really cute, because they come up, these little kids who learned how to talk, but they haven't really developed the left brain thinking yet, and they'll come up with the darndest things. Like, if you say that it's raining cats and dogs, you know what they'll do? They'll look up in the sky, and they'll say, where are they? I mean, they're not being funny, they're being real. Everything is very concrete, and there have been many books written, and Art Linkletter made a mint by getting kids up on the stage and doing this, and I hated him for it, because I'm a retired art teacher, and I work with kids all my life, and I appreciate where they come from, and when you start exploiting kids, I hate that. Anyway, they're very concrete, and as an adult, when you're concrete, people think you're a little strange, you know, do you always have to take that literally? And of course, a lot of times it's very, very funny, it's very humorous, and that's okay, that's where your sense of humor comes from. Anybody connect with that?
Yeah.
Okay. The left mode is abstract. It just takes a small bit of information, like they'll take a survey. The Gallup poll will take a survey of this whole nation, and they'll come up with this amount of information, and they'll say, okay, this is what everybody is thinking from this little bit of scale of Gallup poll. This is according to the way the numbers go. This is the way you can put it in the computer, and it comes out, and I suppose it's fairly accurate if they have enough population in there to represent different ages and so forth. The right mode is analytic. Analogic. It sees likenesses between things. We say, oh, gee, that is like this and that is like that. Don't give me a little sampling. I see it on a broader scale. I see it on a much broader scale. I just can't take you people in this room and say, this is Holden. Because it's not. On Friday, we have 180 people coming. That's a lot of people, and that's a lot of personalities, and I can't take any one of you and put you into a category and say, okay, these are the people with glasses, these are the people that are this age or that age. That's not the way that the right brain functions. We see more individual, and we see it on a much broader plane. I don't go, when I did my graduate work, I had to do this kind of survey stuff, and I just thought it was so stupid to waste my time doing stuff like that. Sending out these questionnaires that you send to people, and you give them a dollar if they filled up. Oh, what a waste of time! But that was part of the course, so I had to do it. The left mode is temporal; keeps track of time. Everything has to be, it sequences one thing after another again, A to B, B to C, C to D. I am married to an engineer who's very well-trained, okay? He has kept me alive all these years. We're celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary this year. And he has kept me alive all these years because I'm always bouncing off a wall. And he comes up behind me, picks me up, brushes me off, and says, okay, go, you know. He has kept a roof over my head. He has taken care of, helped me raise my entire family. And he has been my rock. And because of him, I've been able to bounce off the wall. But if he weren't there, I probably wouldn't be as right-brained as, or let myself be as right-brained as I am. But here's what he does as far as time is concerned. Our last name is Young Hans. And in Germany, Young Hans is a very famous clock watch people. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're in Schramberg, and they make all the clocks in Europe. Almost every clock you look at has Young Hans written on the bottom of it. Like Seth Thomas, it's Young Hans. Ooh. But because of that, we have a house full of clocks, and they're not just little clocks. They're big ones, little ones. They all tick, they all talk, they all gong.
Oh my.
We have 12 of them. And, of course, everyone has to be about 1 minute apart so they don't all gong at the same time at midnight, which will just take you right out of bed. Guests, I'm used to it.
Oh,
we have guests, and they just go crazy.
Yeah.
So he has to keep them a minute apart. Okay, so every morning he gets up. Oh, okay. Oh, he's a little fast today. Oh, she's a little slow. I wonder what's wrong. So we tinker around. Mm-hmm. And so he gets them just the way that they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I get the job of winding them all up. You know, this doesn't interest him, but keeping track of time is really important to him.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come to hold it, I don't know if what they've told you to bring or what not to bring, mm-hmm. but they ask you not to bring your electric mm-hmm. clock that you have, next to your bed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know why? Yeah, Matt knows why.
Well,
Matt, tell us.
This is actually a technical reason.
That's okay.
Okay. The hydro fluctuates, and so
right.
If you plug in your clock, it won't keep straight time.
And it fluctuates because of the flow of, we get our electricity from a waterfall,
mm-hmm.
depending on how fast the glacier melts, how fast the water comes down, how fast the turbines turn, and so forth. So for the first couple of years here, he's bringing his clock down here and saying, Chuck, we've been here about 10 summers. Say, Chuck, why are you bringing this clock down? Well, then I finally figured it out. He wakes up in the morning and he checks it. Oh, he's an electrical engineer. Oh, voltage dropped. It drops so many whatever the voltage does. And he says, oh, yeah, well, the electricity dropped last night, and there are times that we even run out to and check out there to see if the water. All this before breakfast. And he has to tell me over my oatmeal, and I just go, that's really interesting. So that's why, if you want to be frustrated, just go ahead and bring the clock on here. I'll never tell you the right time. One day it's fast, one day it's slow. The non-tempo, the right brain is without a sense of time. I'm sure that all of you have experienced getting involved in a project and then you completely lose your track of time. You're at your sewing machine, you're at your carpentry work or at your computer, and you just completely lose it. And I've been on my loom, and there are times when I
Oh, I am so miserable. I can't figure out why. Now look at the clock. My God, I've been sitting here for 4 hours, and I haven't even gone to the bathroom. That's my problem. You know how you completely lose yourself? That is your right brain. You have just, you don't hear the telephone. I mean, you know, and when you're reading, a lot of people are like this. When they read, they don't. The earth that came in. My husband's like that. He just really gets into this book, and, you know, he just really focuses, and that's having slipped into your right brain, because you're not reading words when you're reading a book. You're living. That's caring.
That's in color.
Yeah, in color.
Yes.
Yours is in color. Great.
I can interrupt once.
Yeah. I dream in color.
Yes.
Does anybody dream in color in here?
Yeah. Very rarely.
Very rarely.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It just means that you're highly sensitive to color. Do you know that kids who are little, they will see people with auras. Some, I don't think all kids do, but you will walk up to them and they'll see a rainbow around you. If you have bad vibes, they don't see a rainbow. You know, and I think that animals have a sense of this too.
Yeah,
you know, they don't know you from Adam, and yet some cats will come right up to you and jump on your lap, even if you don't like cats. I don't like cats; they always keep crawling all over me. You know, I go, go away. But I don't know what that is. But as you grow older, you lose that sensitivity, and I think this color thing is all part of it. You don't need to go to the movies.
No.
You see it in color. That's pretty neat.
And he's like, he's right there.
Yeah, right. Okay. The left brain is rational. This has to make sense. Honey, if we're going to buy this house, we're going to have, you know, the budget has to be straight so that we can make the down payment. We have to be rational. We're going to buy this car. Well, what are the payments and this and that? And how good is the motor? And what do we do if we're right brain? Oh, God, I love this house. I love the trees. I love the yard. I love the rooms. Oh, forget the money part. Or I love this car. I love the upholstery in this car. I love the color. You know, you don't care what's under the hood, because that's not where your thoughts are. And so the right brain is non-rational.
Is it something to do with being male or female?
That's a good question. We tend to, now this is not, I don't swear on a Bible on this, but most women are created with right brains, with strong right brains, and men with left. And I think it's because it's this caretaking, this caregiving that we raise children, and you can see it's more the sensitive side of life, and we're not the hardcore, see? And so this is why oftentimes women will marry men who are exact opposites. The only big problem with that is learning to live with each other.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard living with somebody who doesn't see things the way you do, especially your first year of marriage.
But you can be left and right.
Right, you don't have to be one or the other.
Yeah.
The thing that makes you either right brain or left brain is where your talents lie. If you have very strong talents in being creative, you will probably tend to be more right brain. If you love math, you're in technology, you love that aspect of it, then you'll tend to be more left brain. And some people can be both. I switch over.
Yeah.
I force myself to develop my left brain. I forced myself. It's like wearing two left shoes, but I forced myself.
Like, I love figures. I mean, I'm bookkeeping and accounting and that, and I really love figures.
Uh-huh.
But yet,
you can identify with this too.
Mostly.
Yeah, mostly. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. We talked about left brain being logical. Also, the left brain is linear, thinking in terms of linked ideas. This, again, is like A to B. It's like a fence. A linked fence. One thing is linked to another. You can't, the strongest, what is it, the weakest link? What did I say? The weakest.
The chain is the strongest, the weakest.
Yeah, right. The chain is probably the weakest link. And for the right brainer, there is no weak link. We don't link things together. We'll let it dangle out there, but we'll pull in some other things to accommodate that. Yeah. See, we see things all at once. How many of you learned how to wash dishes from your mother? I'm talking to the women, I guess. Where you
You scrape the plates, it's not holes, but you scrape the plates, and then you rinse them, and then you put in the water, and then you wash them with so much soap, and then you dry, rinse them, dry them, and it's all like this, A to B to B, C to C to D. And even to this day, when I wash dishes, it's not the way I really think. My kitchen isn't very acclimated to that method, but I still find it when I'm doing it the way my mother taught me. Maybe just out of habit, maybe it's out of respect for my mother, I don't know.
You do it methodically.
Yeah, you should, yeah, I do it methodically. And you know, yeah, there's a real plus to this because I don't have to think about it. How many of you think about it when you brush your teeth? Do you really take that to... Sometimes I leave the bathroom and I can't remember whether I brushed my teeth or not. I'm like, oh yeah, I think I did. Yeah, you do it so automatically.
I know.
Yeah. Sometimes you can't, you know, you just don't know.
Like
done.
Turning the coffee pot off and then worrying all the way home, did I do it? You know you did it.
And it gets worse as you get older, believe me, folks. Those of you who are younger, it gets worse as you become seniors. We call that senior pauses. Yeah, you just can't trust yourself. Okay, I want to share with you, that is basically what the right and left is. Now, like I say, they work together. Sometimes they don't work together very well. If you're really, really talented in one or the other area, you will pretty much hang in there on that side. It's just, and creative people sometimes are very difficult to live with because they're so spacey. They're spacey. Let me read to you about the creative personality. Okay, let me pass these out. I think I got enough. Why don't you share?
Okay.
Well, sir, I think I have. Can you share? Okay. Oh, that's your shoe.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Wait, yeah, no, your foot wasn't in it.
No.
Okay. You want this one?
No.
You got it. Okay. Okay, these are some of the characteristics of the creative personality. Some folks have isolated traits that compromise what they call creative personality. One, high level of energy, enthusiasm, and general zest for life. You see things in such a new way that you're always stimulated. Nothing ever gets to be mundane. I take the same trip into town. You know, every time I go, I follow the same road. And yet I never get bored because there's always something to look at. My husband, I drive him crazy because he keeps saying, why don't you look at the road? Stop looking at the trees. Stop looking at the sky. Whatever, whatever. But a creative person is full of energy because this is very energizing. Okay, and I'm very enthused about life. A well-developed sense of humor and the ability to laugh at oneself. I think that goes back to the fact I know that I look at a lot of things that are concrete, and sometimes, you know, everybody's laughing at me, and so I develop a sense of humor to go with that, just so I'm accepted. When we were first married, my husband's friends, of course, were all engineers. They all live in a box.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, very, very small lot.
Take themselves very seriously.
Yeah, they do. And they would ask my husband, where did you find her? Well, I beg your pardon, you know. I never really fit in with those engineers, and they always thought that I was a hoot because I was always seeing things so crazy, you know. So anyway, I had some difficult years trying to prove, you know, who I didn't even really know who I was. I was trying to be something I wasn't. We have a high level of tolerance for uncertainty and ambiguity. If you're left brain, you've got to go from A to B to C to D. When you start something, it has to have a conclusion. You have to know where you're going. And if it doesn't come there, if it doesn't end where you want it to end, then something went wrong in between. If you're right-brained, you don't have to have a conclusion. You can hang loose on it and just, maybe it'll never have a conclusion and it really doesn't bother you. You don't have to always have an answer. My husband always has to have an answer. He gets a bump on his finger, you know.
Is that a bite? Did I dump it? You know, did I do this? Did I do that? You know, is this arthritis popping up? Oh, you know, it goes on and on and on. Trying to analyze this thing, and the thing is not analyzable, because who knows what it is? I get a bump and I say, oh, well, so what? If it's not bleeding, I just go on with it. We have a need for and the ability to make productive use of solitude. I need my solitude. We talked about that in Bible class. I don't know how many of you went to Bible class this morning. Mm-hmm. But faith and all of these unknowns that have very little words to them are all right brain. And you cannot get in touch. I don't want to be a preacher here, but you can't get in touch with yourself or your spirituality until you have some downtime from the world. Mm-hmm. You have to have solitude. And there isn't any artist, there isn't any of us that run around town doing all these errands and we get all caught up in the wild of life. You know, everything moves so fast and we come home, we jump up to the easel and we start painting. That's not the way it works. You have to center. You have to get down to where you can come. You can let go of all of this earthly stuff and get involved in yourself. This is why Holton is such a wonderful place. Mm-hmm. All of you have let go. You left all your extra baggage down there at the dock. And you're open. You're open to new, fresh ideas. Take every one of them home and make them work, but you're willing to listen. And there will be some changes in your life because of it. Yes. Okay, we have openness to new ideas. You know, we don't have, some of us who live in a box, some boxes are smaller than others. We're going to do it that way? Well, you can't do it that way. You can't do it that way. You hear this in churches all the time. Can't do it that way. You never got it that way. They're not open to new ideas. Not that all new ideas work, but they're not even ready to listen. Right. Mm-hmm. There's a certain amount of ability to withhold judgment. You say, okay, I'm not really sure about this, but you know, I'm not going to make a judgment about it right now. I need to see more of it, experience more of it, and I'll see how it works out. I don't need to have an answer right now. I'll just lay low. And there's a lot of things about Holden that I say to myself that gets me through the summer, that I'm not going to make judgment, because there's a lot of things here that are not part of my world. Yeah. And it's really hard, especially when you're on staff and you're here every day, you know, doing all the infrastructure work, you know. And so I just withhold judgment. I withhold judgment. There's a certain amount of playfulness. That's because you're free. Your right brain frees you from all this luggage that you keep carrying in your left brain. You know, is there enough gas in the car? Am I going to run? Yes, I've run out of gas once. I did. Do we have enough money to make this trip? Do we do this? Do we do that? You know, whatever your life encompasses. That's so. I mean, I'm on the web. I have email. I have all this stuff. I'm a writer and very active with AARP. I have all this left brain stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's so wonderful to be able to put that aside and just leap around like a child in the playground. I just love to come to Holden and just leap around. Mm-hmm. I literally can't leap, but you know what I mean. My knees wouldn't let me do that anymore. And I'm open to the environment like all of you are. I'm willing to take all of this in, and it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with God and what He has made in this world, and I'm willing to let it come into me without any judgment, without judging myself. Just let it soak in. I come to get my cup filled, and I do. When I get up here, it's pretty empty. Mm-hmm. Well, there's always a downside to being creative, very much down. A lot of people call you childish. Now, will that person ever grow up? You know, come on, let's get serious about this. You know, I'm in church meetings and I say things and people look at me and say,
I don't see anything funny about that. Why don't you get serious about this budget? You know, and I always have to find some little thing to laugh about. Not that the budget isn't important, but I see things in a different way. And very few people agree with that sense of humor. How many of you have been to movies and you're laughing through this movie and nobody else is laughing? Yeah. They'll say, you know, oh, my husband keeps going, knock it off. Oh, this is so obvious. It's not supposed to be funny. I just keep seeing angles to it.
Yeah,
so,
you catch something that the director might have done or that wasn't meant to be, that's not part of the actual plot.
Right. Oh, drives you nuts, doesn't it?
I just laugh at it the whole time. Mm-hmm.
It's like having ring around the collar. Nobody wants to get close to you when you do that.
I was listening to George this morning. I don't know if any of you know George, but he's a Native American here.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to him very briefly, and he said, yes, he said, fellow students and I closed down our school when I was in high school because they were mistreating us. And I just thought that was so funny because I used to work at school, but nobody else laughed. And I suddenly realized, I really stepped out of bounds here. This Native American was sincere and serious about the fact that they were being mistreated at this church school, and the kids protested, and they did close that school. Those kids refused to go to school and pulled the school down, but I thought it was funny, and nobody else did. And then I had to think about it and say, no, this was a serious matter.
Oh.
And I confessed up right before the group, so I apologized for my eyes.
Yes,
and
yes.
George wasn't laughing.
Yes.
He was very serious.
Yes.
I just want to share that.
Yes, and I've done that in front of groups too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yes. And it's really important, if you catch yourself, it's really important to mend right off.
Yeah.
Right off.
Yeah.
Be humble pie, because it's, you know, you don't want to make enemies.
But we are different, aren't we?
Yeah, we are different. Right. You're right. Independence and solitude translates into rudeness or a stubborn streak. I have a friend who's an artist, and he walks around, and talking about being in a box, and he's so focused. He walks like this, and you say good morning. He doesn't even see you. I mean, he's headed for a studio to paint. He lives in his right brain. And you know, I mean, he doesn't even see a hole. He'll walk right into it. He is so focused on that right brain. Now, that's really just the extreme. You know, I don't ever want to be blessed with that much creativity.
I like public events, like a fair or something where there's like porta potties all lined up and there's a line that's kind of at a safe distance away, and there's all these people lined up, and someone will just like hone in right on the toilets and just like go right for the door because they just. There's the bathroom.
Yeah.
And everyone goes, hey, hey, hey. And they don't even take in the whole picture.
Uh-huh.
Is that
if you have an emergency, you have an emergency.
Well, there's that issue.
There's
too,
that but... issue, too. Yeah, I know.
But it seems, I'm not.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Rude and stubborn, but it seems like the person seems selfish.
Well, that's
the
and just
don't
totally
see the big picture.
My agenda.
They don't see the big picture.
When they're really focused, some people walk around in this right brain focus, you know, and they don't, not too many, but I know some that do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very difficult to work with because they just don't even see you. You have to shout, hey, I'm here, listen to me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
I think that's the difference between management and staff people. Management need to see the big picture.
Uh-huh.
Staff people, you give them a special assignment, a specialty, and they'll do it really well. But they may not have an overview of the big picture. They just know what
or maybe they don't even, if they did, maybe they wouldn't be able to see it either.
Oh.
Because management has the ability to be able to think big.
Right, see the big picture.
See the big picture, right.
How all these parts fit together.
Yeah, right. Good point.
I think that's just because management's been given that job. I think we all have the ability to.
Well, there are some people though who would see who could be exposed to all this, but still not be able to put it together.
But I think that the idea of the way you run a business has completely changed, because I know I don't work for somewhere where they expect me to do a little teeny piece and not understand the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
I would never work in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not in management.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 23. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's totally changed. I think the way people are thinking about businesses now is not really acceptable.
There's exceptions.
maybe. But there'll still be a place in the work world for left and right brain people who are extremely gifted in both areas. Yeah, there still will be a place for them. Yeah, your top CEOs are probably very gifted. Yeah, in both areas. Yeah. That's why they get such big salaries, because there's not that many.
Oh, I wouldn't go for that correlation. That's a different seminar.
I won't go into that. All right. Tolerance for ambiguity also can mean tolerance for heaps of debris on the floor and old pizza crusts in the underwear drawer. We tend to be very sloppy. And when I'm doing something in my room, you can't really find your way in the door. And when I'm all done, I'll clean it up because the next project comes. But I can't be bothered picking stuff up. I'm moving, you know, and I'm cutting and I'm
pressing. Well, I'm the opposite there. I've got to have cleaner, I don't start.
Well, if it's a new project, I have to start. I even clean out my waste load basket.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm doing a switch now. I'm going to this.
But once you get into
which it. Once you get into it, you can't be bothered. Right, right. And there is a matching antic spirit that goes with drawing. If there ever was a silent process, it is creative and antic and serious and silent. And I think you can almost say that we're talking about specifically drawing here, but you can put any kind of creative act in there and say that there is an antic spirit that goes with it. I mean, if you're free, like you were jumping around in those pictures, you're going, wow, 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 neat. Let me share with you how the
photograph of your
where's my photo of your okay. I guess the best place, I think one of the funnest places too. Yes.
Sorry.
That's okay.
We came to draw and so we're drew something funny.
Well, we don't have time to draw. I'm really sorry about that. I'm really sorry about that. In the comics are right brain people are always a target for humor. And here we have Dennis the Menace. We have Dennis and Margaret and Joey. And Joey says he's a little neighbor kid. Isn't his brother, is it little Joey?
Neighbor.
That's a neighbor. Okay. Dennis has a hammer in his hand, he's got some wood, he's got this contraption, he says, there, it's done. Joey's standing there with a question mark around it because he can't figure out what it is. And of course, Margaret, who is the smarty aleck left brain little girl, says, great, but what is it? Says Dennis, a birdhouse, I think. Margaret says, you think? Yeah, he says, I'll have to test it out. If any birds move in, then it's a birdhouse. And then Joey says, well, what if no birds show up? And Dennis says, then I'll have to figure out what else it could be. And Margaret says, well, what if it doesn't turn out to be anything? And Dennis says, gee whiz, Margaret, you can see it's something. Little Joey says, do you think any birds will move in? And Margaret says, that depends. Joey says, on what? She says, whether there are any cuckoos in the neighborhood. See how, and Dennis is really creative. He's always into something. He's this child's brain. Here is Peanuts. Lucy says to Linus, what are you drawing? He says, a cow. And of course, Snoopy is sitting there. She says, that's not a cow. Well, says Linus, I've never seen a real cow. Well, says Lucy, it looks more like a dog. Why don't you just change it to a dog? And so Linus is looking at this picture. He said, well, how can I do that? And good old Snoopy comes up and says, well, why don't you just add a wolf? And we'll put him around a little ball and say, wolf, W-O-O-F, and that makes a dog. You see, it's all in the eye of the beholder. You're constantly making concrete and
people poke fun at us all the time, and that's okay. I don't care. I don't care. Okay. I would like to spend the next half an hour doing a right brain switch. Oftentimes when I'm into drawing or whatever creative act, I can actually feel myself, I can actually feel that switch in my head, very much like your eyes came together, like that. I can actually feel that in my head. But it takes a certain amount of environment, atmosphere to make this happen. You just, like I say, you just don't rush and sit down and say, okay, now I'm going to be creative. It doesn't come that way. Probably the best way is to center, to relax. And we're going to do some of that and do some imagery and some relaxation exercises. Now, I have used this relaxation exercise with my kids in school. Whenever they came in for art class, especially the ones that just came in from recess, they are just wild. You know, and they're all hepped up, and so I have them put their heads down, and I'll go through a relaxation thing for a couple minutes, and I say, okay, on the count of three, open your eyes. And at least two or three, never open their eyes or lift up their head. They're fast asleep. I figure, well, you need sleep more than you need art class. They'll wake up somewhere along the line. And they do. But it's so relaxing. You know, when kids are free. I'm sorry. Before we go into the relaxation thing, I want to test your brain on this. We'll go into that in a minute. No doubt you've seen this. Well, what's the obvious? Let's talk about negative and positive. The positive is what? What would you say the positive
the
is?
Cups.
The cups. The cups. The door. Okay. How many cups do you see? The chalices?
Nine.
Okay. Now, do you see anything else in the picture besides that?
12
faces.
Faces. How many?
12.
6.
If you can't see, come on over here. It's hard to see.
Well, there'd be 12 profiles.
Yeah, because there's two to every face.
Right.
Now, isn't it interesting how you cannot look at both at the same time?
Oh, nice.
You cannot look at the chalice at the same time you're looking at the faces. That's the switchover. That's the switchover. You could even make the faces the positive if you wanted to.
One on top of the other.
And switch over to the chalices. Mm-hmm. But there's a switch. You can't see both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seems to be more drawn towards the chalice face, though, because it has the top of the cup.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
See? This is another famous one. Do you see the old woman or a young lady?
Young lady.
The young lady is the obvious. That's pretty obvious. Does anybody see the old woman?
Yeah.
I think I've seen this about. Mm-hmm. I always see the young lady first.
Because I think she's pretty positive. Does anybody have any problem seeing the old lady?
Could you talk about positive names? I don't understand that.
Well,
I don't see the young lady.
Positive is the more
dominant?
It's more dominant.
Dominant image?
Yeah, it's a more dominant image. It could be in color. It would probably dominate in color. Or shadow or something.
Does the old lady have eyes?
Yes.
One. Non-eye? Yeah, one eye.
And one eyelash?
Oh, yeah, I see it.
It's not the same as the young gal, so.
The young lady's chin is the old lady's nose.
Oh, all right. That's what I wanted to know.
Can you see a bullet?
Oh,
see
that switch?
Yeah, I can see it.
You see the switch? She looks like a witch.
Yes.
Yeah, she looks like a witch. And the velvet cord around the young lady's neck is the mouth.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that turns.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
The velvet cord. Do you see her nose?
Oh, I see
the nose. Here's the nose. Now everything else is the same. This is all the same. And the hair is the same.
Oh, now I see her.
The mouth. Now I see it.
Oh, that's weird.
Isn't that interesting? You can't you can't see both at the same time.
No,
you
have to
see
one or
the other. I had trouble seeing
And I saw the old lady first.
Really? You saw the old lady first?
Yeah.
You do, some people do.
Yeah,
some
right?
people can, yes.
I don't have any trouble seeing it now, but
Okay, talk about hidden images. I think many of you are probably familiar with Bev Doolittle. Bev Doolittle is an artist from California, and everything that she paints or draws has hidden images in it.
It's a mountain in the back.
Four horses.
Three eagles.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the eagles yet.
Now, obviously, probably the most obvious place for these hidden figures is in the trees. Because you're positive, they're so positive. And the horses are here.
You
will see the
image of the
people. I can't see that one.
Oh, beak is closed.
Well, you guys are really astute.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I see the mouse. Right? Somebody sees.
I see them.
There's some people that see three
okay.
eagles.
Three
How
eagles.
Many of you see three eagles?
Right.
I see two.
They're all at different levels.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
The beak is like closed, real.
Okay, I see.
Are there wings? Their wings are...
No, it's just
the
heads.
Head.
Just the
heads. It's just the heads.
The beak and the eye and the head. Oh, it's like the old Seahawks logo.
Right. Mm.
Okay.
And some people see other things. Do you see anything else?
I thought I saw a mountain back there.
Well, it's way far up.
I won't compute. I won't dispute that at all.
I thought I saw horses initially.
Yeah, someone else, other people see horses too.
Oh, you
really?
I thought that was.
Well,
out.
Initially I saw like it was weird horses. They weren't.
If you ever get, if you can ever afford one of her books, she's really expensive. Her paintings are really expensive, but there's a. She has books out that are wonderful, coffee table books, and they're all full of pictures like this.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, really?
I think that some of you are probably familiar with Eschner, the mathematician. Eschner. The mathematician, I mean, he is phenomenal. Here's one of these people that is so gifted in the left brain. He's a mathematician, but he's taken all of what we've talked about, you know, and been able to create art with it, not through a computer, but through paintings and drawings. But I don't think computers were around when he was developing, and that's probably why. He probably would be putting together some of these visuals that we're having trouble with. Okay, here's one of his drawings. All right, it starts out as a
scroll.
It's a scroll, okay? Let's see what happens here. Okay, and above the scroll we have three rectangles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're pretty much all the
same. Triangles.
Oh, I'm sorry, triangles. Triangles,
yeah.
Okay, let's move up. He's done a little variation. Not much. Just a little variation. He's made them curvy. Okay. The next row made it even a little bit more curvaceous. Ah, look what he's added. A few things. Look what he's added to that one. See anything new?
I see three doves.
Okay, we're cutting there. Okay. What are you seeing there?
Black and white birds.
Birds?
Birds.
Birds,
yeah.
Are they black? Are they white?
Both.
He's got doves and black birds in there. Do you see? You see the negative and the positive?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, here he's developed it even more. He's put some shadow in there to define the wings and the neck. And then he keeps going with it. And pretty soon as he starts, look, they're changing position.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is that they begin to completely fly off the picture.
Oh,
and they're just up and gone.
Mm-hmm. who is that? His name is Erstner. He's a mathematician. Mm-hmm. Huh. Don't know where he's from. There was a huge display of his work in a showing in Chicago. He has all kinds of fantastic things. I mean, he has castles and steps, and I mean, it's like the Tower of Babel.
Where they walk upside down. Mm-hmm. You can't tell if the steps are going up and down.
Yeah,
I've seen that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's driving.
The hand drawing the hand that's drawing the hand.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, all right, you just, all right.
Well, Frank, can you move this back to what, to left brain, to left brain, right brain? How does this tie together with that?
How does this tie together? All right. How does this? All right. Let's talk about this. How does this tie together, left brain and right brain? Mm-hmm.
I would think that the concept is very right brained, but the technical execution is very left brained. So the example of Escher is that he's like 100% above.
Yes. Yes.
But conceptually, it's very challenging and creative.
All right, and the hand is very distinguishable. There's just no doubt about
He's
it.
Technically done a perfect drawing of a hand.
But look at the cuff, and look at the wrists. They're not completely developed, are they? He's let your imagination fill in the blanks. So he's left something for the imagination of the person. Mm. And you can look at it anyway.
Oh.
Anyway.
There you go.
Oh. It doesn't make any difference how you look at it.
Oh, there you go.
Isn't that neat?
Isn't
yeah, I like it that way.
Huh?
I do, too.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh. I guess what we're talking about in answer to your question is that we're taking the cognitive birds, the trees, we're taking things that are cognitive that are here, and you can see them and feel them, and we're turning them into something with a different eye. You have an artist's eye. You're looking at it in a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't it help you see the relationships and things between things, too? It simplifies everything. So, like, you can... Whereas if you look through all those triangles, you just see like three black triangles or something. Mm-hmm. But by looking at the black and white birds, you also realize that there's three other white triangles. It helps you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It would take a long time for a left brain person to get from a bird to a triangle,
yep.
And vice versa.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
It really would. You would never make that jump very easily.
Right.
Okay. This is something that often appears in children's books and in the Sunday papers. Mm-hmm. How many animals can you see?
Mm-hmm.
All right. When you first look at it, your left brain says it's a lion. Tiger.
Yeah.
All right. Now, plug into your right brain, and what do you see? Lose the tiger and crawl inside of it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
just call it out as you hear it, as you see it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't hear you.
Well, I see a wolf, don't I?
Okay.
A wolf.
Don't question yourself.
Yes,
I'm seeing. They're not complete bodies. They're not a broom.
Yeah.
Swans. Swan.
Is that a horse or a?
I thought it was a horse.
There.
Yeah,
it's got dads on his or a sheep or something.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe goats
or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Peacock?
Yeah,
huge. Oh, I see the horse.
Oh, yeah, I see. Kids have no problem with this.
Wow.
They just go right into it.
Wow.
Do you see the elephant? This is probably the most difficult. Do you see the elephant?
Let's see.
There's only part of him. His trunk runs all the way down the picture.
Oh, I see the trunk.
He's only partially there up at the top. There's not that much.
Up on the top, on the right?
Uh-huh.
On the right?
Right here.
Oh, yeah, right up there.
Right?
Oh.
here's the trunk, and here's the head, and here's his eye. Here's your eye.
Here's the eye.
Yeah, I see. I even see Mickey Mouse.
Oh, yeah.
From a practical standpoint, though, uh-huh. You've heard that expression, here's a person that everything they touch, it touches to gold. Everything they touch turns to gold. It's this ability to make money or not, an easy ability to make money or not make money. It's all in the way you see something.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not? Is it left brain or right brain? It's ability to make money.
Combination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The right brain
probably doesn't care about money.
That's true.
The left brain says, well, I got this right one.
Yeah, that's right. It really doesn't.